This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Russia says the U.S. is creating global chaos by not honoring its security commitments a day after announcing the suspension of a major nuclear treaty. Iran slaps sanctions on nearly 40 European Union and British entities and individuals in response to bans imposed on Iranian individuals and entities. The daughter of a slain black American civil rights activist, Malcolm X, announces a plan to sue the FBI and the CIA for his assassination back in 1965. Hello and welcome everybody here in the Iranian capital, Tehran. This is World News. Our top story for this half hour. The chairman of Russia's State Duma has accused the United States of creating global chaos by not honoring commitments on security issues.
By ceasing to comply with its obligations and rejecting our country's proposals on global security issues, the United States destroyed the architecture of international stability. They plunged the world into a state of conflicts and challenges.
Volodin made the remarks as Duma is set to consider President Vladimir Putin's draft law on suspending the New START treaty with the U.S. The agreement is the last major pact between the two countries, which limits them on the deployed strategic nuclear arsenals. Russia and the U.S. possess nearly 90% of the world's nuclear warheads. Putin proposed the suspension of the treaty during Tuesday's annual State of the Nation address, arguing Moscow had been forced to take such a step. That's because, he said, the West wants to inflict a strategic defeat on Russia and claim its nuclear facilities. And Russia has alleged the U.S. was behind the explosions on the undersea Nord Stream gas pipelines last year, calling the attacks an act of international terrorism.
As many of us recall, in principle it was clear who could be behind this act of international terrorism. The U.S. made several statements and boiled down to the fact that if Russia continues to act in a way that is not pleasing to the U.S., then Nord Stream would be destroyed. Then there was the former foreign minister of Poland, Mr. Sikorski, who in his Russophobia thanked the U.S. on social media. Then there was the careless text sent to someone who also hates our country, the former Prime Minister of the U.K., Theresa May.
The Russian ambassador to the U.N. Made the remarks during a Security Council meeting called to discuss the gas pipeline blast. Nabenzi also accused Germany, Denmark and Sweden of trying to cover up the U.S.'s role. The three countries launched an investigation shortly after the blast happened in September last year. They've so far concluded that the damage was caused by powerful explosions due to sabotage. Moscow has been pressing for an international probe after a U.S. investigative journalist alleged Washington was behind the incidents. Meanwhile, the U.S. has rejected Russia's claims, saying that Moscow is trying to distract the world from the war in Ukraine.
Let's be clear why we are really here in the Council today. Later this week, as we near the one-year anniversary, the General Assembly will debate the impact of Russia's illegal and full-scale invasion of Ukraine. Today's meeting is a blatant attempt to distract from this. As the world unites this week to call for a just and secure peace in Ukraine, consistent with the UN Charter, Russia desperately wants to change the subject.
The UK made similar comments asking why Russia has decided to bring up the incident after 5 months. The blast heavily damaged the multi-billion-dollar pipelines that carried Russian gas to Germany. The explosions also invoked fears among climate activists as they sent huge volumes of methane, a potent greenhouse gas, into the atmosphere. China has said it is gravely concerned about the situation and asked for a thorough investigation into the incident. Ukraine's president says his country's forces are maintaining their positions on the front line in the east as Russia claims advances in that region.
It's very important that despite great pressure on our forces, the front line has undergone no change. I thank all our fighters for this, all soldiers and sergeants, officers and generals who are defending on the relevant front theaters.
Zelensky said Ukrainian forces in the eastern regions of Donetsk and Luhansk are doing everything to contain Russian attacks. Meanwhile, in Moscow, Russia's defense ministry said its forces were advancing on Bakhmut and Donetsk. Last week, Zelensky acknowledged in an interview that there may come a time when mounting losses might make it impractical to keep defending the city. NATO and the European Union accused Russia of escalating tensions over Ukraine after Moscow suspended participation in the New START arms control treaty. This is while Moscow insists that the West is to blame for the Ukraine conflict. Jerome Hughes reports in Brussels.
Senior NATO, EU and Ukrainian officials met in Brussels on Tuesday to discuss the war in Ukraine. The decision by Russia to step back from a 2010 nuclear arms control deal, the New START treaty, was criticised.
More nuclear weapons and less arms control makes the world more dangerous.
Regarding the treaty, some analysts claim it is the West that has been acting as the provocateur. After all, for weeks we have seen growing support amongst Russia's enemies for a large number of long-range missiles to be sent into Ukraine. NATO and the EU have agreed to help Ukraine establish its own weapons procurement system.
The production of warfare material in Europe today, it is still not in accordance with the urgency in the front line.
The US and its allies have provided Ukraine with at least 150 billion euro worth of arms in the past year. There is a growing anti-war sentiment in the EU.
Mostly good for the weapon industry, I guess. So it's almost worse always about making finances and stuff.
We all want peace. It's a crazy situation.
Of course, the prices, the rise of prices, yes, it's very worrying, yes.
I hope like the war is going to be like stopped as soon as possible.
There are regular calls in the European Parliament for peace talks.
12 months later, there is a risk this could become a permanent frozen conflict, not good for Ukrainian civilians or our citizens and businesses, dealing with price hikes and higher bills.
Perhaps there was a certain degree of arrogance on display at the gathering in NATO on Tuesday.
Although this is the first meeting that we held in this format, I already begin to regret that it will cease to exist when Ukraine will become members of both NATO and the EU.
For a whole host of reasons, experts say the chances of that happening anytime soon are slim to none. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
In Greece, anti-war protesters and activists have held a rally in the capital, Athens, to denounce U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken's visit to the country.
Because they are an imperialist country that puts their nose everywhere, like they interfere all across the globe and do imperialism because they're imperialists, and we're against imperialism. And both here in Greece, in Ukraine, in the Middle East, everywhere where imperialism happens, and we want to fight against imperialism.
The protesters, with banners and signs displaying anti-NATO slogans, gathered outside the U.S. embassy. They accused Washington of meddling in Greece's affairs and pushing the country to get involved in the Ukraine conflict. They called on their government to avoid being part of the war and demanded the closure of foreign military bases in Greece. Blinken arrived in Athens on Monday. He held talks with senior Greek officials, including Prime Minister Kyriakos Mitsotakis and Foreign Minister Nikos Dendias on issues like security and energy. Thousands of ambulance drivers across England and Wales have walked out yet again in an ongoing dispute with the government over pay, and staffing workers across industries in the UK have hit the picket lines in recent months to demand action from the government. Saipudo's report from London.
They said they were in it for the long haul, and they have kept their promise. thousands of ambulance drivers from two separate unions walking off the job across much of England and Wales. Their demand, a pay award that keeps pace with the rising cost of living. The message, that the service is already stretched beyond its limit. Mondays are typically the busiest day for ambulance services across the country, with people now advised to use the 991 service only in an emergency. Despite the disruption, public support for the strikers is strong.
I live with two ambulance drivers and a nurse, so my answer is yes, they deserve more. I think they need more pay, yes.
We're very lucky the people that are working in the hospitals are nice enough to carry on working during the pandemic and not strike earlier, to be fair, because we needed them, they were there when we needed them, and when they need us, we're not there for them, sort of thing, so I think it's a shame.
Despite being on strikes, the crew still leave the picket lines to respond to emergency calls. But the message is, even serious calls will face substantial delays.
The strike action by NHS staff has only intensified in recent weeks, with multiple other walkouts planned for next month. Another single biggest day of action will be the beginning of March, when nurses will once again walk off the job, just like ambulance drivers are doing today.
The unions insist the solution is in the government's hands, a pay increase of about 10%. In the case of nurses, 5% above inflation, that's stubbornly in the double digits. Yet the man holding the strings to the public purse, Chancellor Jeremy Hunt, says that's not affordable.
Government's been lots of money on other things, even NHS-wise, that needn't be spent. That could be paying the people that look after everybody, yeah.
February has already seen more than 500,000 people take industrial action. With public strike fatigue nowhere in sight, the walkouts are likely to continue for months. Saeed Pourreza, London.
Iran has summoned the British charge d'affaires to protest what it called unfounded accusations leveled against Tehran. The foreign ministry told the UK envoy that the accusations are part of an Iranophobia policy, urging London to stop the unfriendly approach. The UK government has accused Iran of posing threat to journalists on British soil and summoned the Iranian envoy on Monday. Britain and the EU have also imposed several rounds of sanctions against Iran over what they call a crackdown on protests in recent months. They announced the latest such measures this week. On Tuesday, Tehran hit back, targeting dozens of UK and EU individuals and entities with sanctions. Iran says the EU and Britain back terror groups working against its security. Well, Iran's foreign minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian has arrived at the Iraqi capital Baghdad on an official visit. Upon his arrival, Amir Abdollahian explained the aim of his trip to the Arab country.
This trip is aimed at pursuing bilateral issues and ties. Also, there will be meetings with senior Iraqi officials in which the two sides will discuss important regional and international issues.
Amir Abdollahian said his two-day visit to the neighboring country is at the invitation of his Iraqi counterpart Fuad Hossein. The top diplomat said Iraq plays a prominent role in the region and has returned to its normal position. He added his visit coincided a conference of the Arab Interparliamentary Union in Baghdad. The visiting Iranian minister was welcomed by a number of senior Iraqi officials, including Deputy Foreign Minister Hisham Al-Alawi. The Central Bank of Iran, CBI, has opened a new gold and currency exchange center in a bid to regulate market fluctuations, stabilize market rates, and control speculative trade. Yisumi Shamari has more details on that.
Bringing currency volatility under control is the name of the game for the new governor of the Central Bank of Iran, Mohammad Reza Farzin, who is charged with getting a grip on the Iranian rial and devising new strategies to alleviate the country's economic woes amid unprecedented Western sanctions. And to do so, he has unveiled a new golden currency exchange center in an effort to regulate market fluctuations, or in his own words, stabilize market rates by adjusting demand and supply. But most importantly, as a powerful tool to control speculative inflation. For those familiar with Iran's economy, the most essential economic parameter that can effectively tip the scales.
We have enough resources to provide for all demands for exchange. The main challenge we are facing is speculative inflation as a consequence of negative forecasts, which leads to producers increasing the price of commodities and therefore creates a vicious circle. We need to overcome this challenge, and I'm calling on all those involved in economic activities to join hands with us and strictly follow the new policies of this newly launched center of exchange.
This means that all foreign exchange resources, notably from export, must be supervised by the central bank.
The 28,500 tomon exchange rate for basic commodities and essential medicines still stands. Other demands for foreign currencies have been carefully categorized, and in the first leg, we are allocating $4 million to specific purposes, which include travel, studying abroad, and research projects, the details of which will be announced shortly.
This is actually a policy that has been successfully implemented by Russia and allowed the ruble to recover its value within a month after its initial plunge at the beginning of the Ukraine war.
Russia's success in implementing this policy is mostly due to their system of financial supervision, which ensures that regulatory rules are strictly observed. There are major differences between the economic and monetary structures and approaches of Iran and Russia. And if Iran wants to succeed, it has to take all this into account.
And the good news is, if this policy is successfully implemented, the recovery of the rial is imminent in a situation very similar to what happened in Russia.
Russia's national currency is gaining strength. The ruble is hitting new highs against the U.S. dollar. The Russian economy is making a turnaround despite unprecedented Western sanctions and pressure. Now Iran, taking Russia as a role model, is hoping to do the same. Gizumisha Ahmadi, Tehran.
And Malcolm X was the iconic leader of African-American Muslims and a civil rights activist who was assassinated 58 years ago. Now his daughter, she intends to sue the FBI, the CIA, New York City Police, and others for his death.
For years, our family has fought for the truth to come to light concerning his murder. And we'd like our father to receive the justice that he deserves. The truth about the circumstances leading to the death of our father is important not only to his family, but to many followers, many admirers, many who look to him for guidance, for love. And it is our hope that litigation of this case will finally provide some unanswered questions. We want justice served for our father. Thank you.
Shabazz accused various federal and New York government agencies of fraudulently concealing evidence. She claimed the evidence shows the agencies conspired to assassinate Malcolm X. Shabazz says she seeks $100 million in damages. Malcolm X was killed on stage while preparing to deliver a speech. Soon after, some of his associates said they believed various government agencies were aware of the assassination plot and let it happen. In 2021, a New York State judge threw out the convictions of two men who mistakenly spent decades in prison for the murder. The judge said there had been a miscarriage of justice. And that brings us to an end here on this edition of World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Bazaar.
Whether man-made or not, food can have fascinating backstories. Products usually take a long journey before they end up on the dining table. Nevertheless, the food industry follows several golden rules that have helped it steadily grow over time. The most important of these is continuous product innovation and improved production processes to reduce costs and wastage. Others involve packaging and product accessibility, but probably the king of all rules is the taste that drives the food industry.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Bazaar, the weekly programme that analyses markets, profits, industries and all sorts of things that connect us nationally and internationally. This week, we will be exploring the food industry and its related agricultural markets. We wanted to see how the food sector has expanded over the years and what companies are doing to increase their profits. So, let's check out the Tasty Grub.
To become more familiar with how much work goes into food production, we visited Golha Food Industries. It was established nearly a century ago, and its products are now a household name. It produces hundreds of items in seven categories, such as dried legumes and fruit, spices and canned products. It also takes great pride in its healthy product line, including gluten-free flour products. This producer has devoted a lot of attention to the packaging of its products. Due to its diverse product list, it purchases such materials as cans, plastic, and cardboard to design the appropriate type of storage systems for distribution. The company has a massive daily output due to its expansive production facilities. Most of the work is done by automated machines, but the fine details are handled by experienced staff. All production processes start when raw material enters the company. These materials are first tested for quality before hitting the production floors, most of which are domestically supplied. After being tested, the material is sent to various closed circuit machines for processing. Then it is time for sorting and more quality control tests before packaging.
Food production is a very sensitive process requiring many checks and controls that guarantee the final product is safe for consumption. And production machines play an essential role as they reduce errors and maintain constant output results. Plus, many of these machines have been domestically engineered, whereas they were previously imported at high prices.
This company has a highly equipped quality control and research and development lab. It's where many new products are created and food safety standards are controlled. Moreover, the staff in this department implement food sciences to make innovative products. It might be interesting to know that this department also has some of the best food tasters. This producer has been awarded Best Research and Development Department in Food Production for many consecutive years. Among its many achievements, it has also been awarded the certificate of favored brand by customers. This wouldn't be possible without adhering to strict national and international food safety and production management standards. Following such standards has helped it maintain its export share in the global food market. With years of experience, this company has grown such that it provides thousands of employment opportunities, both directly and indirectly. It also has thousands of agencies and stores all over the country. Plus, its products can also be purchased online. As part of its future vision, this company is looking to increase its market share both domestically and abroad. It also has long-term plans to increase production and improve the production process for efficiency.
The Iranian food industry has taken giant strides away from its traditional production methods. Industry participants say using food sciences and new technologies has helped the food industry grow faster than before. Never more than now has food been more accessible. In fact, it only requires a touch of a few buttons to receive it at home. Therefore, food packaging is a critical part of the production.
Over the last decade, there has been a great emphasis on developing packaging for the food industry. This is because Iran indigenized many machines needed to process and produce food items such as deli meats, beverages, pickles, and so much more. Proper packaging also increases shelf life, which is important for consumers. Previously, food items such as spices and dairy products were purchased bulk from customers abroad due to a lack of packaging. While exporting items in bulk has benefits, it's not as profitable as selling prepackaged foodstuff. So, in addition to adding value to raw products such as meat, companies have also designed attractive packaging to contain food in more manageable portions. Such a strategy increases not only product quality, but also food safety, which helps producers meet international export standards. This trend also helps companies with branding and has created job opportunities for designers.
As you probably already know, the food industry is heavily dependent on production in the agriculture sector. So it's no surprise that the agriculture sector holds the pulse of national food security and food exports. Plus, it is one of the only sectors that has been barely impacted by the US-imposed sanctions and the global coronavirus outbreak. That was horrible.
We looked at some figures from the Ministry of Agriculture to see how this sector is doing. Last year, around 6 million tons of agricultural and foodstuff products were exported. Trade of these products raked in roughly $4 billion. Pistachio, saffron, and confectionery products topped the export charts in value during that period. Other agriculture sectors, such as livestock, poultry, and aquaculture, have also generated millions of dollars in exports. Last year, nearly 450,000 tons of these items were sent to markets in neighboring regions worth $500 million. Agriculture accounts for 8% of the country's gross domestic product. It might be interesting to know that around half of Iran's total non-oil trade comes from this sector. That's all based on data from Iran's Ministry of Agriculture. According to Iran's Customs Administration, the total non-oil trade value rose nearly 40% last year. Over 120 million tons of non-oil products worth $72 billion were traded with other countries in that period. Meanwhile, the government has implemented measures to encourage the development of agriculture. One trend this sector is witnessing is the application of smart technologies for the cultivation and harvest of various products. There has also been a boom in developing greenhouses and green practices to preserve natural resources. The word plastic was initially used to describe pliable and easily shaped objects. However, it only recently became a name for a category of materials called polymers. Such materials are abundant in nature. Take cellulose, for example. It's the material that makes up the cell walls of plants. However, synthetic polymers are a more recent invention of the last 150 years. These come from the plentiful carbon atoms found in fossil fuels. Since then, they have become an integral part of the industry, technology, and even various sciences.
We will explore Iran's plastic and polymer productions. We will also check out some of its downstream markets and their contributions to the national economy. These days, we use more plastic than ever before. It's terrible. So where does this material come from? And what goes into making this stuff? Let's find out.
Our quest for answers led us to a company specializing in making various polymer products. Parsa Polymer Sharif was established some 20 years ago and is a knowledge-based company that was born in the research department of the University of Sharif. As a leading advanced polymer compound manufacturer, it makes various products essential to everyday living. It produces compounds based on commodity thermoplastic resins like PP, PE, and the famous PET, or PET. It also engineers resins like PVC and so much more. This knowledge-based company is a major supplier of raw materials to many industries. Some include original equipment manufacturers in the automotive market and PVC pipe producers in the construction industry. Over the years, this company has helped Iran save millions on products that would otherwise be imported. This firm has three main functions: research and development, innovation center, and production. It also has a brand new line for researching and producing biodegradable polymers for the packaging industry. Most of the raw materials needed for production are domestically purchased. When this stuff enters the company, it is first tested and graded based on its quality. Then, according to its intended use, the raw material is formulated and sent to machines for production.
Machines used in the polymer industry utilizes some of the most advanced machinery for production. The extruder is one of the most commonly used machines. They play a central role in plastic production. Extruder lines are the largest converters of plastics worldwide. Some of these machines can be domestically manufactured while others are still imported.
Its products are all tested in its well-equipped research and development lab. The various granules and resin compounds undergo over a dozen tests while being analyzed for quality here. Also, new product formulas are created in this highly technical research and development department. Through these facilities, the company is expanding its product portfolio. Products made here are produced along the lines of exports. So, national and international quality standards are implemented during the production processes. This means the quality of products found here doesn't just match international standards, they go beyond the quality of competing foreign brands in the international arena. The headquarters of this company is located in Sharif University Advanced Technologies Incubator. Owing to this, it has strong relations and collaborations with the scientific community. It has also been awarded for its contributions to the scientific and industrial sectors over the past years. This knowledge-based company also exports its products. The company has a unique future vision strongly intertwined with sustainable business development. This is partly due to its forward-thinking and social and environmental responsibility outlook.
Now, polymers are the primary materials that build many other products. Plastic items have different polymer formulations depending on their application. The majority of polymers made in Iran are domestically consumed. Some of its biggest customers are in the construction sector. Also, plastic is extensively used in the medical industry and transportation.
Almost everything around us is either made of plastic or has some plastic component. Moreover, plastic has played a central role in the development of the medical industry over the past 60 years. These materials are used to create hemodialysis machines, disposable needles, IV drips, and testing equipment vital to modern medicine. Plastics have also had a considerable impact on developing high-quality prosthetics. The National Medical Device Directorate estimates that Iran's share in the global medical device market will reach well over $7 billion in the next 3 years. PVC materials are also largely used in Iran's construction industry. For example,
Iran's Doors and Windows Manufacturers Association estimates the domestic demand for PVC doors and windows is around 35,000 tons annually. This is partly due to the current residential construction boom in the country. The home appliance industry is also another mammoth customer of the polymer industry. Based on figures from the Ministry of Industry, Mining and Trade, Iran has doubled its production in this sector over the last 3 years. In 2021, around 15 million home appliance units were produced, with exports soaring to roughly $140 million. So, polymer production is key in expanding many manufacturing industries, which have raked in large amounts of foreign revenue for the country.
Well, I believe it is that time of the show where I should take a little break and pass the action over to my good friend and colleague out there on the field. Take it away.
Despite all the advancements in technology and the problems it has solved, food security is one it hasn't. In fact, it is becoming more and more of an issue beyond the countries that have always been grappling with it. One solution is to, well, end inflation and the global economic crisis, but that's hardly a solution. There's no end in sight with that. But another way is to use technology to make things more efficient. We wouldn't be needing more land because we're not getting it thanks to desertification of more and more land. We also wouldn't be needing more water because we're also not getting it, also thanks to desertification. We would actually need less of both if only we could manage our resources better.
Iran has some potential for farming and agriculture, and that's a massive understatement if you've ever heard one. But we could definitely do with some improvements, some innovations in the field, especially with irrigation, because, well, we've been experiencing some drought and some water shortages a little bit more than what climate change would warrant. And that's why we're here to check out a smart greenhouse that believes has the answer, that the shakeup that the industry needs to be a lot more efficient, especially with water, plus some extra goodies. So stay tuned to this episode of The Bazaar to check out what they've been able to come up with.
About that efficiency, greenhouses can help provide that by creating a controlled environment that, while it could be much smaller than a field, it can yield higher quality produce and more produce per acre. Greenhouses can protect the crops and vegetables from extreme weather conditions, pests, or really any other external threat. The parameters that are controlled in a greenhouse are light, ventilation, humidity, and temperature. This would allow the farmers to create the kind of optimal micro-ecosystem that would eventually lead to them growing healthier, tastier, more nutritious, and, you know, better-looking produce.
What you will find in this smart greenhouse are tomatoes, cherry tomatoes, bell pepper, and cucumbers. There are certain types of fruits and vegetables that are preferred to be used in greenhouses, for example, the ones that I just mentioned. And there are certain types of crops that are not optimal for greenhouse use, for example, wheat and rice. I mean, look at all this vertical space that will be wasted if you were to plant wheat in here. So, but that's just some information about greenhouses in general. What makes this particular greenhouse unique and smart is that all of the parameters that need to be kept in check in a greenhouse are all monitored and manipulated remotely through the cloud and Internet of Things, instead of some worker or some farmers coming in and out of the greenhouse to manipulate things manually. That's the smart aspect of it in a nutshell. But to find out more information about the smartness of this greenhouse, let's hear from some of the experts here.
In this greenhouse, we measure all essential parameters for the plants, like temperature, moisture, CO2, ambient light, the water parameters, and the moisture of the roots, using the available sensors and control them with the actuators and the smart control unit. And also remotely control it via Internet of Things. With properly controlling the climate and the irrigation system, we increase the productivity up to 30% and decrease the water consumption by up to 40% comparing other hydroponic greenhouses in our country. And in the next step, we are trying to recycle the drained water of the irrigation system and pass it through some filters and put it back again into the irrigation system in order to further decrease the water consumption. And also, we are developing a robotic harvester, including a mobile-based manipulator, soft gripper, and vision system equipped with artificial intelligent algorithm in order to detect the ripe crops and pick them in the proper time.
1% of the world's water resources are fresh water, and most of it, in fact, 70% of it, is used in agriculture. What we choose to do with that tiny, finite reserve is a responsibility that we need to bear. Greenhouses can control the irrigation of plants. You may have sophisticated plumbing systems in the ground or in the cocoa peats, as you will see, to prevent overwatering, which can promote rots and fungal diseases, and reduce evaporation, saving huge amounts of water in the process. There is even the option to recycle the runoff water and put it back into the system to further save up on water. The great thing about this particular smart greenhouse is that you don't need to be born into a farmer family that has thousands of acres of land to make this a viable option to you. You can own land as small as 100 square meters and it would still be a financially viable option for you. Especially since after the initial installation phase and the setup process, you won't be needing much manpower to control the environment.
Interest has been shown in this smart greenhouse by certain countries, especially in Africa, such as Kenya, Niger, and Ethiopia. The idea, and of course the working proof of the idea, really has the potential to shake up the industry. And if it catches on, it can only mean good things for the farmers and the food sector in general. Thank you for staying tuned to another episode of Bazaar.
Many thanks for that wonderful report. Now for our final portion of the programme, let's check out some news and trends in the food and agriculture industries and some of its related trades. Each year, millions of tons of food go to waste. That's awful. Now a United Nations report shows that Iranians have the lowest food waste per capita in the West Asian region.
The report was put together by the Food Waste Index from the UN's Environment Programme. It shows that regardless of income, every Iranian throws away an average of 70 kilograms of food per year. This is below the global average set at nearly 80 kilograms. Food is mainly wasted in three areas: homes, food services, and retail. Household food waste accounted for the highest at 60% of this total.
The agriculture sector is shifting towards technology to realize a new generation of agriculture in the country. Iranian knowledge-based companies have developed dozens of technological products in this field.
The Vice Presidential Office for Science and Technology says some 120 technologies have already been produced by 30 knowledge-based companies. These items are now being integrated into the industry. The products cover everything from cultivation to harvest and sales of crops and play an essential role in the productivity and sustainability of crops.
Agriculture is one of the fields in which nanotechnology has been able to develop. Over 50 widely used nano products have been launched in this sector this year alone.
The potential of nanotechnology in agriculture is high. Over 7,000 knowledge-based companies in the country are actively manufacturing a wide range of domestically needed products. Roughly 260 companies of this total are active in agriculture, biotechnology, and the food industry.
Well, that brings us to the end of our show today. I've been Samson Sees. Sees you in the next Bazaar.
Rabbi English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to Rabbi English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Rabbi English Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
I thought Jawadi talks about the various keys of life and has brought about this book to be a companion for the very famous Mafatih al-Jiran, where one is a tool or the keys for paradise, and this book, of course, are the keys of life.
The Keys of Life, a program designed to tell you that what Islam gives you will help get you home with joy and faithfulness. So, well, listen to
The Keys of Life.
The world is a very, very big house, many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up, we must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. My name is Sheikh Zaid Al-Salami. A few years ago, I started the course of wanting to commentate on a very important book that I believe is something that would be useful for everyone who reads it, and that is the book Mafatih al-Hayat, written by Ayatollah al-Uzma al-Sheikh Jawadi Amuli. We're talking about the social system of Islam, we're talking about social justice, we're talking about how we need to always keep that level of grace, benevolence, compassion, mercy when we are wanting to implement any kind of social awareness when it comes to our society. And this can be something that we implement not only towards Muslims but also towards non-Muslims as well. And there's never a case where we are able to justify any kind of injustice towards a non-Muslim. I think that's very important for us to remember, because some of us might think that our understanding of Islam when it comes to these kind of matters of society is only in the affairs of Muslims and something that we need to do only when we are living in a Muslim or Islamic society. And you know the difference between Islamic society and Muslim society. But I'd like to continue to remind my dear brothers and sisters that that's not the case, because we can see that from our previous episodes that the implementing of justice is above and beyond any kind of religion. And when we try to pinpoint the areas of what is going to damage that justice, what is going to ruin or harm that sense of cohesion that we need to have as a society, we need to eliminate that. We need to stop it. We need to not allow it to spread and become contagious, become cancerous. This is exactly why there is that strong emphasis on al-jama'ah, on being a part of a group, being a part of a community, of remembering that you need to be involved, that you shouldn't be anti-social, that there are so many opportunities for you to want to interact, although there are going to be problems. You know, and this is one of the beauties of the great personality of Imam Khomeini, rahimahullah, where he was at the highest level of Sayr wa Suluk and in the high ranks of Irfan, but at the same time, he was as social as can be, and he was involved in the politics, he was involved in society, he was involved in the Muslim Ummah. You know, this is contrary to the general understanding that if you want to be a spiritual person, stay home, avoid everyone, become a hermit, become a monk, live a monastic life. Absolutely not. This is not what Islam wants from us. Yes, you need some time for yourself. You need some time alone. You want to venture out into, you know, your own world. These are important things, but at the same time, you need to be a part of something, you know. And Imam Ali has that beautiful saying, "Salamullahi alayh, kun fi nas, wa la takun ma'ahum." Be among people, but don't be with people.
Ayatollah Javadi Amali, the author of the book Mafatihul Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafatih, ought to be in two volumes. One volume, the present volume, Mafatihul Janan, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc. But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree. Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam, who has stressed out the reward for praying, has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree. There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment. When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned. We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
Now, when we look at this notion of being with society, being with jama'ah, anything that's going to disrupt that is something that we need to stop, which is exactly why hajrul mu'min, or avoiding or staying away, or severing your ties, or cutting off a fellow Muslim brother or sister, is something that has been reprehensed in Islam, especially if it is going to lead for more than 3 days. So you have a chance of reconciling within 3 days. Anything more than that? No. I'll share some hadith with you. This hadith, it says, أَيُّمَا مُسْلِمَيْنِ تَهَاجَرَا فَمَكَثَا ثَلَاثًا. Any two Muslims who have cut ties with each other, and that has prolonged for 3 days. فَأَيُّهُمَا سَبَقَ إِلَىٰ كَلَامِ أَخِيهِ. So any of the two, whoever of the two, was to proceed in talking to the other person that they were not talking to for 3 days, كَانَ السَّابِقُ, this person, this preceding person, who initiated the conversation with the person that they weren't talking to for 3 days, كَانَ السَّابِقُ إِلَى الْجَنَّةِ يَوْمَ الْحِسَابِ, this person will be the quicker person towards Jannah on Judgment Day. Such an interesting hadith from many, many ahadith that speak about this exact same context, where it says that your zal, you being upset, you being angry with someone, you need to fix it within 3 days. Reconcile, solve the problem. Anyone who involves themselves in bringing back these two people together to speak is also going to be abundantly rewarded. We'll continue on with this topic in our next episode. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Wassalatu wassalamu ala Sayyidina Muhammad wa alihi tahirin.
Driving past, walking fast, to the field of dreams, hear the children's screams.
That was The Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind. A momentary emotion, space spent in time, in time. Memories fade like a dusty window pane, and you can't see your past no more. The only thing that remains is that feeling of warmth in your heart that will always be there, be there.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.